almost anything that pertained to the household. I particularly like eating utensils, different types of eating utensils, early forks and spoons and all kinds of two-tined raw forks and that type of thing. Fireplace tongs I've collected for many years. A lot of peels, some fire shovels, hand irons. I try to devote my collecting to things that have some kind of history or ties to certain families. My collection's a little different than most collections. It's kept together by where it came from. Which I feel is important. I mean, I don't document things probably as good as I ought to, and when it comes to ephemera, I don't have the funds to collect a lot of that at this point because I don't have acid-free folders and envelopes cost money. I always say you can collect the artifact, you can collect a container to put them in. I think I will focus my collecting on the artifact. Someday somebody else can worry about how it's kept. You can only do so much. But I used to copy an awful lot of photographs. I don't do so much now. As I get older, I don't see the significance in it that I once saw, I guess. Just this last Thursday, there was a fabulous collection of stereoptical views that were sold at Pertain to Otsego County. But that stuff has gotten to the point where it goes so high now at the auctions, I can't do it. I'd like to see, and I should take a more active role in that. That's something I've stressed a good many years with different people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you used to work with Nisha and help with their collecting.
I was on the advisory board.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do with the advisory board?
We met two or three times was all. Mm-hmm. It never really, I think it was more a figurehead thing than anything else. I think it sounded good that we have an advisory board. I'm giving you an honest answer on that. I worked with Gibb on the marble barn. I actually did the initial talking to Sherm on that, on the marble barn, and on the hop kiln. I always thought the Marble Barn was a significant building, but I don't think it's a particularly typical building. I think it has a little bit of Dutch influence. It's kind of an unusual barn. I was pushing more. I was trying to get more typical things at the time. Mm-hmm. I like it being here. I like it being saved. But, like I say, the typical three-bay barn would not be that. It's an unusual barn. And the log barn today is unusual, but I think they were much more common than we realized. I talked to a guy, and he's still alive. His name is Virgil Zinneker. He remembers several log barns over in the Evanston, Burlington area. And he's the only person I ever talked to that remembered ever seeing any others other than the one that's on the museum. And that came from the Brooks farm, the log barn that's here, who were related to me also. Where that barn came from is a very unusual house. It's part of a house, I should say. It's a plank-constructed building, but the planks run horizontal and they're dovetailed on the ends. That's the only one of those I've ever seen. We have some unusual architecture. There's another house over west of Harwick where they laid 4-inch boards, one on top of the other, just laid them up, and then they clapboard over that. I'd never seen that either before. So every once in a while, you kind of draw conclusions, well, this is a typical type of construction. that looks typical, but you find out that there's always something that's a little bit different. It's hard to come to conclusions sometimes. And I think that's a mistake that we all make in the early stages. You say, ooh, look at that. You think you have the answers, but you really don't. And there's so much we don't know. It makes it very interesting. You never get bored studying historic things. I bought a little terrine type thing, a little bigger than a sugar bowl. The other day, English transfer. I'd never seen the form before in my life. Very unusual form. And I always looked at that stuff. And it has a couple dings in it, but it's the form is so intriguing, I purchased it. But I can show you a few more pictures. There's another neighborhood schoolhouse. That's called the Chase Schoolhouse. The entranceway is kind of unusual on that. Once in a while you see them where the door is on the side. Usually they're on the end. That has the transom. That could be a fairly early one, too.
Where was this one?
Well, it's not far from my house. These schools were laid out, Jedediah Peck and one of the Drapers laid out the school system in this state, maybe in the country, I don't know. But they were so far apart, you could almost take a compass and put a compass on a school and put a circle around and touch the other ones. They were pretty well, pretty systematic. So this one was probably 2 miles from my schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in Bissell Hollow, which later became Chase, and they had a post office there because the electric trolley line came through there. So they named it Chase Post Office, and then Bissell Hollow got dropped through the years. But that one just fell into the ground, rotted away. Looks like the roof had a pretty good start there already, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Right near that was a wonderful stone arch bridge. And that's how Christian Hill got its name. That was the second church. The first one was a stone church. You can see the boot scrapers there.
Yeah.
I have one of those.
This looks almost like a clapboard church.
That's clapboard. The old original one was stone across the road. I wonder if the steeple was added afterwards. See the difference in the shingles?
Yeah. Yeah, it almost looks like there should be a fourth window on the side because there's that gap. Maybe yeah, there's a mud room.
Or... Yeah, there was probably an entry room. That building was taken down and made into a carriage house. And they consolidated with the Hartwick Christian Church.
Mm-hmm.
There's a hop yard there. Which I think is kind of a contradictory thing, isn't it?
You mentioned earlier that if more people thought about where the hops went, they might not have grown it as often.
That's true. That's my feeling.
Did you find any evidence of, like, a giant temperance movement in the region, or...?
No, they had that later on, yeah.
Yeah.
I never got into that part that much.
Okay.
I'm pretty limited on my knowledge of that. There's probably other people who would know much more about that. Mm-hmm. There used to be a blacksmith shop over behind here. But they took the foundation from this and the stone church, and they built a barn up the road, and the old guy's name was John Hackley, and he said, I ought to have a good barn. He said, I got the foundation out of two churches in it. And 10 years later, somebody arsoned the barn.
Oh, no. So you mentioned these people in the community. Did you seek them out to talk to them about the history of their buildings and their family history? Or?
Yeah, I was always interested in that. There was a neighbor, his name was Gerald Bush, who lived where that barn burned. His family was the Hackley family. His mother was a Hackley. And he was very knowledgeable on local history, and I used to spend a lot of time with him.
Mm-hmm.
Go up there in the morning, he'd be cooking pancakes, and the house would be all smoked up in the pancakes. he kept it about 60 degrees in there. It was cold. But he was extremely knowledgeable. Knew a lot of local history.
Has there ever been a local history club or association?
Well, there was the Otsego County Historical Society.
Right.
Which consolidated with NYSHA. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the, early on, that was one of the, when NYSHA came to Cooperstown, was when that consolidation took place. And so they kind of swallowed up the Historical Society. And then we formed a Historical Association, which is pretty limited as to what they can do financially. But NYSHA had a pretty good collection. I mean, some of the Cooper family was in on that. I don't know if there's documentation on that at this point or not, but that was, and then there's a little historical societies. Harwick has one in Fly Creek.
Did you meet people that you're in, like you were talking to in the community in those historical societies? And
a lot of those historical societies, I've been active in them to some degree, but how do I put this? They're more. I was always drawn to people one-on-one basis more, because they wanted to have, it was like a meeting where people got together for refreshments and things like that. And I guess I was more detailed. Mm-hmm. Some of the speakers were good and what have you like that, but I like to go look at artifacts on site. That's one thing about auctions that I used to like. There used to be a lot of on-site auctions, so that what was sold there was there. Came from the farm. The farmers didn't, farm people, for the most part, weren't collectors. They didn't go to other farms and buy stuff. What was there was there, and which is no longer the case today. That a circumstance of that nature is extremely rare. There's a few around the county yet. But I always thought on site and was one of the best ways to study. Mm-hmm. The most true. And I guess if I was going to say anything to NYSHA or the Farmers Museum, I think that the graduate program, I think one of the best things they could do is study on site, because there's going to be, down the road, there's going to be very little that you can see intact. There's still some. There's still quite a bit. I mean, I would guess 50% of what I remember as a child is pretty well gone today. But there's still stuff there. And it's exciting. I mean, one of the most exciting experiences that I can remember as a child was going in this attic when I was a kid.
Over the summer kitchen.
Over the kitchen. No, that was the regular kitchen. Okay. There was no... Well, there was a summer kitchen on the back. On the flat part. But I remember my dad going in with my grandmother. She wouldn't let me go in the attic when I was a kid. Until I started tapping trees. And then I went up and got buckets, and then I got intrigued. There was some pretty neat stuff there. But my father and her went to clean the chimney one night, and I went in there. And I remember a flyer off a flax wheel hanging up with two loom pulleys. And I asked my grandmother if I could have them, and she said I could. And then later on I found the spinning wheel buried up behind some other stuff in the attic, which probably was made in Fly Creek. Can't prove it, but these certain turnings on these certain types of spinning wheels, they're regular flax wheel, but there's a certain turning that keeps turning up around here. So, and that was one of the most fascinating experiences that I had. I remember going in there and I got real excited. There was everything in there. She was a wallpaper hanger, so one side was a pile of paper. You couldn't see what was behind that. And then she made rag carpets, and there was bags and bags of... It was a fire trap. Bags and bags of rags. And they were old feed bags that were cloth bags. But that, just seeing those things in there, in a place where they hadn't been moved in 100 plus years, was fascinating to me. And when I've gone to auctions, I've seen things that have come out of attics that I haven't seen the light of day for decades. And I don't know what there is about it, but it just excites me. I don't see so much of it as I used to. Every once in a while, I pick up something like that. And it's when I know the whole background of the family. And if I buy something from a place, I usually research that place, that farm, and background. That's why it's necessary for me to have a fairly good local library.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have the maps and different things like that, and I use them all the time. My atlases are tattered and torn, and my histories are tattered and torn, and there's notes all through them. But some of the families are really intriguing when you get into them.
Mm. Oh, well, thank you so much for your time. We've been talking for close to 2 hours now, so we'll have to take a bit of a break. But thank you so much for speaking with me today. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
This has been fascinating.
Yeah.